Hi everyone, my name is Dr. Mark Eatinson. Welcome to Heal NPD. Pathological narcissism is a form of mental illness that causes unstable self-esteem. It's also often associated with arrogant or dismissing attitudes toward other people. Occasionally, the grandiosity breaks down into feelings of worthlessness, depression, and an intense need for reassurance from others. These dynamics can be difficult to understand. But by viewing them through the lens of attachment theory, we can obtain insight into where they come from, how they develop, and perhaps most importantly, how they can be treated. According to attachment theory, we're all born with an instinct to form attachment bonds with one or more significant caregivers. This instinct is embedded into something called the attachment system, which helps regulate the child's proximity to their caregiver during the first few years of life. The caregiver functions as a secure base, a stable and attentive foundation of care and reassurance from which the infant or young child can begin to explore their world. Whenever things get too upsetting, the attachment system kicks in, causing the child to cry or cling to their caregiver in order to reestablish the feeling of safety and security. These interactions repeat themselves many times a day during the first 4 years of life. The child feels distress, the attachment system is activated, the child cries, the caregiver responds, and safety and security are restored. Over time, these patterns of interactions are organized into something called internal working models. These are unconscious expectations about how human relationships work. There's an internal working model for the self, and there's a corresponding internal working model of other people. These internal working models combine in predictable ways to form attachment patterns in early childhood. Attachment patterns are observable, measurable, and relatively consistent throughout development. They can be correlated with all sorts of outcomes. Attachment studies have followed subjects through infancy, childhood, adolescence, and adulthood, looking at how attachment influences things like peer relationships, mental and physical health, and partnering. Childhood attachment patterns eventually turn into adult attachment patterns. This chart shows the four adult attachment styles and how they relate to underlying internal working models of the self and of other people. On the x-axis is model of self, which is also sometimes called attachment anxiety. And on the y-axis is model of others, which is also sometimes called attachment avoidance. These dimensions of attachment anxiety and attachment avoidance combine to form four prototypical adult attachment patterns. The first, secure attachment, is defined by a positive model of self and a positive model of other people. The self is viewed as worthy of love, and others are trusted to give love and support. This results in low attachment anxiety and low attachment avoidance. The next, preoccupied attachment, is defined by a negative model of self with a positive model of other people. The self is perceived to be unlovable, but others are perceived as capable of providing love. And this results in high attachment anxiety and low attachment avoidance. There's a tendency to be preoccupied, hence the name, with obtaining and keeping the love and support that the person needs, but that preoccupation is dominated by anxiety that the love will be withdrawn and the self will be abandoned. This style is correlated with higher levels of dependency and insecurity. The next, dismissing avoidant attachment, is defined by a positive model of self and a negative model of other people. The self is perceived to be worthy of love, but others are seen as incapable of providing the love that the self needs. This results in low attachment anxiety with high attachment avoidance. The self turns away from intimate relationships, often developing dismissing attitudes toward other people and a kind of compensatory self-reliance. This style is associated with feelings of self-sufficiency, low levels of emotional intimacy, and independent attitudes toward life. The final category is called fearful avoidant attachment. It's defined by a negative model of self and a negative model of other people. In this pattern, the self is perceived as unworthy of love, and others are seen as incapable of providing the love that the self needs. This results in high attachment anxiety with high attachment avoidance. The person may express a confusing combination of attachment-seeking behaviors that are marked by ambivalence and mixed messages. They want love, but they feel they don't deserve it, and they also fear that others will reject, hurt, or abandon them. This style is associated with higher levels of mental illness. Since attachment looks at a person's underlying model of self and other people, it's useful for examining many forms of mental illness, including pathological narcissism. A number of studies have drawn conceptual and empirical relationships between attachment styles and pathological narcissism. In my own research, I've found that grandiose presentations of pathological narcissism are associated with high levels of attachment avoidance, while vulnerable presentations are associated with high levels of attachment avoidance combined with high levels of attachment anxiety. And here's why. Grandiose narcissistic presentations involve a defensive, positive model of self and a negative model of others. This combination of positive model of self and negative model of others is consistent with dismissing avoidant attachment. Meanwhile, vulnerable narcissistic presentations involve a breakdown of that defensive, positive model of self, which exposes the individual to an underlying negative model of self. The combination of a negative model of self and a negative model of others is consistent with fearful avoidant attachment. These relationships between pathological narcissism and attachment are important because attachment studies can draw direct lines between early care experiences and adult psychopathology. And that's because attachment researchers have studied parent-child interactions, categorizing infants into attachment categories during the first few years of life, and then following those children through development and into adulthood. Looking at pathological narcissism through the lens of attachment provides a glimpse into the internal working models of grandiose and vulnerable narcissists, and it also gives us clues concerning how those internal working models were formed. For example, studies have found that infants who are high in attachment avoidance usually have caregivers who show less sensitivity. These caregivers tend to handle their children roughly, to display threatening or angry behavior toward their children, and to actively reject their children's attachment behaviors. They also tend to restrict emotional expressiveness. They tend to appear rigid or detached when relating to their children, and they reward their children's positive emotions while ignoring or rejecting their children's negative emotions. Some studies of early attachment also show that caregivers of avoidant children display open aggression toward their children or intrusively interrupt their children when they're engrossed in play. This insensitive, rejecting, and intrusive quality of interaction creates a negative model of others, and therefore high levels of attachment avoidance. These children learn that their attachment-seeking behaviors are likely to be rejected, and instead of expressing their attachment needs, these children learn to deactivate their attachment system through something called displacement. They can be observed focusing intently on neutral objects in the room when they're separated from their caregivers, or becoming so engrossed with a toy that they may appear to not even notice when their caregiver leaves the room. They don't look distressed. However, physiological measures like galvanic skin response and heart rate show that these children are in fact upset when left alone by their caregiver. They've simply learned not to express their attachment needs openly. They're being taught to ignore them. And over time, this form of regulation becomes autonomic and unconscious, resulting in the avoidant attachment patterns that we see in adults. Both avoidant children and pathological narcissists appear to have experienced an early emotionally invalidating environment. In fact, when describing the early experiences of narcissistic patients, Otto Kernberg wrote, quote, "Chronically cold parental figures with covert but intense aggression is a very frequent feature of the background of these patients," end quote. Both avoidant children and pathological narcissists seem to have experienced parental pressure to hide negative emotions and instead display emotions that are pleasing to their caregivers. They learned to disconnect from their authentic feelings, to turn the volume down on their attachment needs, eventually appearing not to have any attachment needs whatsoever. They were forced to adapt, and this adaptation gradually became unconscious. They learned at an early age to place their focus on things instead of people, to pretend not to be upset, not to have needs, and not to want emotional intimacy or closeness. In psychodynamic terminology, this adaptation is called a compensatory false self. The false self produces a defensively positive self-image that revolves around self-sufficiency. The individual may believe that they don't need anyone, that they're perfectly fine on their own, And for some, this defensive self-sufficiency is also accompanied by pessimism or even aggression toward other people who have only ever been experienced as a source of frustration and disappointment. Indeed, there are striking similarities between dismissing avoidant individuals and classic descriptions of grandiose narcissism. Dismissing avoidant adults lack empathy. They're insensitive to social cues. They're self-assured, dominant, controlling, competitive, and arrogant. All those descriptions are from the empirical literature on dismissing avoidant attachment, but they sound like they were lifted directly from the DSM descriptions of NPD. Although dismissing avoidant adults appear to have higher levels of social competence, they utilize defensive strategies to cut off or minimize distress-related affect that is associated with experiences of rejection. And this defensive strategy is identical to the one that individuals with NPD are thought to use. Dismissing avoidant attachment is conceptualized by one researcher as, quote, a way of maintaining positive self-image in the face of rejection by attachment figures, end quote. That researcher goes on to describe the use of emotional distancing and defensive development of a model of self that is, quote, fully adequate and hence invulnerable to negative feelings which might activate the attachment system, end quote. And this strategy bears much in common with earlier described psychodynamic models of the grandiose false self. Just as in dismissing avoidant attachment, individuals with grandiose narcissistic presentations use an unconscious strategy of ignoring the authentic needs of the self. There's an adaptation to disavow subjective distress, but just as with avoidant children, the distress rages under the surface. In effect, grandiose narcissism involves two models of self superimposed on each other. One is defensively positive, while underneath lies a negative model of self that is hungry, neglected, needful, chaotic, and filled with disavowed experiences of rejection and intolerance of its own attachment needs. When the grandiose model of self breaks down, it exposes the individual to the underlying negative model of self, and we call this vulnerable narcissism. Vulnerable narcissistic presentations are most strongly correlated with fearful avoidant attachment patterns. Like dismissing avoidant attachment, this pattern involves a negative model of others and is therefore high in attachment avoidance. But unlike dismissing avoidant, fearful avoidant attachment also involves a negative model of self. This attachment pattern has been described as stemming from a particular style of parenting that leads the child to believe that others are uncaring and untrustworthy, and that the child themselves is unlovable. According to one researcher, adults who are fearfully avoidant, quote, desire social contact and intimacy, but experience pervasive interpersonal distrust and fear of rejection. This results in subjective distress, hypersensitivity to rejection, and active avoidance of social situations where rejection could occur. Like vulnerable narcissists, fearful avoidant adults display high dependency on others from whom validation is needed to maintain self-esteem. The tenuous balance between subjective awareness of loneliness and isolation and mistrust and resentment of potential attachment figures leaves both fearful avoidant adults and vulnerable narcissists susceptible to feelings of depression, shame, and low self-esteem. Now, I want to be clear that I'm not making the claim that dismissing avoidant and fearful avoidant attachment styles are really pathological narcissism. Rather, I'm making the observation that these patterns produce symptoms and interpersonal dynamics that are very similar to pathological narcissism. We all have attachment patterns, and since there's only four prototypical adult patterns, many people likely fit into dismissing and fearful avoidant categories. But that doesn't mean they're all narcissists. Attachment is superimposed on other aspects of human psychology. This presentation is simply looking at one form of mental illness, pathological narcissism, through the lens of attachment. And when we do that, a picture begins to emerge of a child who was discouraged from showing how they really feel, what they really need. They were pressured to pretend to be okay by caregivers who punished or ignored the child's authentic emotional needs and who rewarded a pretend version of the child that showed them what they wanted to see. This dynamic resulted in a model of others that's negative. Others are experienced as untrustworthy or even dangerous. Emotional intimacy is actively avoided, but it also results in a pretend positive model of self. This pretend self is without significant attachment needs. It doesn't feel distress or need comfort. It's defensively grandiose, self-sufficient, and in perfect alignment with its own ideal image in order to short-circuit any experience of distress that might activate the attachment system that it's not allowed to have. But this positive model of self is built on a shaky foundation. It's always in danger of collapse. When the floor finally does give out, the positive model of self falls apart, exposing the grandiose narcissist to the underlying negative model of self, the place inside where all those unmet and disallowed attachment needs were hidden so many years before. And this is called narcissistic collapse. The individual now has a negative model of self and a negative model of others. They experience high levels of attachment anxiety combined with high levels of attachment avoidance. They don't know where to turn, and they're in crisis. As I've stated in previous episodes, some individuals with NPD seldom, if ever, experience such collapse. Others seem to live in a chronic state of collapse, and these two, quote, types of narcissist are separated into categories of grandiose and vulnerable narcissism. But the reality is that most people with NPD display a complex mix of grandiosity and vulnerability. There may be areas of functioning that are well defended and others that are dominated by vulnerabilities in the defensively positive model of self, flaws in the armor, so to speak. So why do some people with NPD seem to have stronger grandiose defenses and a more robust positive model of self? Well, that's a good question, and one that hasn't really been answered. My own research has looked at the contribution of peer rejection in later childhood and adolescence as one possible contributing factor. Bullying and other forms of social rejection may weaken the defensively positive model of self to the point of chronic collapse. Other contributing factors may involve ACEs, or adverse childhood experiences, like physical abuse, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, or significant household dysfunction that would erode the defensively positive self model via trauma and persistent emotional overwhelm. Despite the widespread online pessimism concerning treatment for NPD, viewing these issues through the lens of attachment provides hope for meaningful change. It is possible to change your attachment style as an adult, to achieve something called earned secure attachment. Moreover, once it is understood that the dismissing, devaluing, and unempathetic attitudes often associated with pathological narcissism are really about attachment avoidance, it becomes possible to connect with the underlying vulnerability and emotional pain that causes those attitudes in the first place. Attachment avoidance is about having been rejected, ignored, or punished for having emotional needs when you were very, very young. Somewhere, deep inside, there's a scared, hurt, and abused child who's very alone. Narcissists tend to be hard to reach because they're frightened. Like the avoidant child in attachment studies, they've learned to, quote, turn off their emotional distress and to hide their need for comfort and reassurance. Those needs are hidden by a suit of armor called the false self that pretends to have no needs whatsoever. It's as if the child were clothed in a suit of protective armor, whose heaviness forced him to grow into grotesque shapes and drained him of energy. Worse yet, after wearing the armor for some years, the growing body becomes so structurally distorted that the armor can no longer be taken off, even though the dangers against which it protected have passed. When this armor fails, that unsupported, authentic self is exposed, and a collapse occurs. This collapse is characterized by attachment anxiety. The defensively self-sufficient narcissist is suddenly, profoundly dependent on other people for help and reassurance, but they're still dominated by attachment avoidance, and this now fragmenting self-structure has nowhere to turn for help. This is when things like suicide and self-harm become particularly dangerous. The small child operating the suit of armor is now exposed, vulnerable, afraid, and stuck between the need for support and the absolute terror that no such support can ever be found. If you identify with any of what I'm saying here, try to use it as a roadmap for beginning to address these issues. The beauty and elegance of attachment theory is that it simplifies complex phenomena. It distills everything down into a couple of easily understood dimensions, the need to feel good about the self and the need to feel that others can be trusted. Try to recognize that the grandiosity you may feel isn't who you really are. It's a defensive suit of armor that you develop to support yourself when no one else would. Vulnerability and collapse are simply what happens when that armor breaks down. The scared, hurt, or angry person underneath represents a part of you that never received care or support. You got so good at hiding that part of you that you may not even recognize it as being a part of you. Most of the information online about NPD is unhelpful at best, because it lacks a fundamental understanding of the defensive adaptations that characterize pathological narcissism, and therefore it's missing the key ingredient that everyone needs to understand and heal from these issues: empathy. Narcissism can only be properly understood through an empathetic frame. The hurt child at the center of pathological narcissism is ignored by caregivers, then ignored by the narcissist themselves, then misunderstood and ignored by society. And that's the tragic nature of this disorder. The false self is so good at hiding the hurt child that nobody ever sees them. And they go on hurting and trying not to hurt via problematic relationship behaviors that sometimes end up hurting others. When you experience a collapse into vulnerability, try to use that as a window into that central pain, that hurt child. Don't try to get away, ignore, or punish that part of yourself. That's what caused the problem in the first place. Instead, try to get closer. Try to call upon the grown-up parts of you to see that child compassionately and empathetically. Recognize that these vulnerable feelings of shame, embarrassment, longing, fear, depression, loneliness, dependency, and even rage belong to a hurt child. Narcissism is about hidden pain, and the antidote is empathy. You can extend that empathy to yourself. Find the hurt child inside the suit of armor. Discover the basic goodness of that child. Witness the pressure that child feels to be perfect, self-sufficient, and without emotional needs. Instead of rejecting or punishing that child for existing inside of you, try to treat that child with compassion and love, and see what happens. Okay, so that's it for today. If you have questions or comments, leave them below. And if you found this helpful, give it a thumbs up, subscribe, and tell your friends. Until next time, take good care.